Hello, friends. I'm Rosie Acosta, your host and guide on this journey to self-discovery and radical love. I've walked a path filled with challenges. Growing up in East LA during the 92 LA riots, it left me searching for meaning, for mentors, for a way to truly understand the purpose of life. But you know what I found? The power of conversation. As a first-gen Mexican-American, these conversations became my compass, offering insight, support, and an endless amount of inspiration. So I decided to create a space where we can share these conversations with you, our community. And that's how the Radically Loved podcast was born. Join me as we dive into topics like mindfulness, spirituality, self-love, and the keys to overall healthy living. I'm joined by my dear friend, fellow author, producer, and teacher, Tessa Tovar.
Hi, I'm Tessa, and I'm grateful to be part of this community because it teaches me so much about what it means to be human. Ever since I was a little one, I was always asking my dad the deeper questions in life. Why are we here? What happens when we are gone? What is the purpose of life? I love this show because I get to ask the questions that cut right to the meaning of life. I've learned that no matter how much we want the path to be clear or straightforward, it rarely is. And that is actually part of the beauty that creates a radically loved life.
Please do us a favor, share the episodes you love with your friends, and leave us a review. Together, we'll learn how to create a life that's truly, deeply, radically loved. Let's begin.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Radically Loved podcast. This is Tessa. I'm so excited to welcome Amy Lee McCree onto the show, who is a best-selling author who's written, I think it's over 15 books now, right, Amy?
18 now.
18? Oh my gosh. Yes. Wow. You're just a powerhouse. And so in the realm of holistic health, medical intuition, Amy, you have over, this might be even more now, but as far as I know, over 23 years of medical intuitive experience, and your mission is to really help people raise their vibration and live happier, healthier lives through exploring things like aura, energy fields. And actually, that's what we're going to talk about today, because Amy just birthed another book, baby, back in February of 2024. And so this book is called Aura Alchemy, Learn to Sense Energy Fields, Interpret the Color Spectrum, and Manifest Success. Welcome, Amy. How are you?
I'm doing great, and I'm so happy to be here and to get to talk about all the things. All the fun things. Yeah.
I have so much to ask you, but I kind of wanted to start with what we, right before we hit record, Amy and I noticed we're wearing that, like the exact same shade of green.
We're greening. Yes.
And when we're talking about aura, I often think of things in color. I even see, for me, numbers are often have a color associated with them. Uh-huh. And so I think that, and some words too, I think mm-hmm. that there's a lot to color behind the conversation of aura.
Yes.
And I'd love to start there if you don't mind.
Sure. First of all, it sounds like you have a little bit of synesthesia, which so do I.
Mm.
So when we see our senses mix, or sometimes, like, you know, colors, sounds, numbers, all these things intertwine within us, that's a sort of a manifestation of synesthesia, which is, it's actually a great segue into part of why I did write about auras, because with 23 plus years as a medical intuitive, synesthesia is a big part of how I get my information. For example, if I drill down, find the root cause of an issue, something in a gene, something in an organ meridian, something on a subatomic level, and then I want to find the remedy to fix it, and it clicks in, you know, things from the plant world, etc. They all have colors, tones, metallic tastes, all these different sort of synesthetic components that help me know that they're right. And in the travels of being a medical intuitive, people's energy field comes up quite a bit. So I define our aura as a biologically generated electromagnetic field that surrounds all living things. It's made of subatomic particles called photons, which also comprise light and electricity. So what photons are our electromagnetic force field in charge, along with the actual light coming from the sun, coming from the lamp, et cetera, et cetera. Our bodies generate a field of photons due to the fact that we have all this electricity moving through us, and the composite, the combination of all of that creates this aura around us. So as a medical intuitive, when I'm looking for the root cause of an issue, or looking also for information from people's spirit guides about their lives or whatever, sometimes we're taken to the aura. There are absolutely colors, textures, other sensory components that come up in the aura. So it's kind of like this cornucopia of sensory information.
Yeah, that's so cool. And I'm always searching for the meaning in all of this. And I always want to dive right into, well, what does it mean that we're wearing green today? How does that affect us? And, you know, the choices we make when we get dressed in the morning, I think are really interesting. Rosie and I are always talking about, actually, the last episode we had together, we were talking about how what we put on our bodies and adorn us with really affect our mood.
Absolutely.
And I think color has a lot to do with that as well.
It does. Tess and I were saying before we hit record how we were both super guided to wear these particular shirts. We both basically tried to put something else on and we felt like, no, we have to wear that green. And I mean, I was seeing it earlier this morning, like, you're going to wear this green shirt. And I was like, is it even clean? Let's hope so, you know?
Yeah. Well, can we talk a little bit about the colors also?
Yeah.
I mean, that's such a broad question. I don't know if I have anything specific besides, like, tell me everything you know about what green means and blue and purple. No.
Yeah.
We don't have all day, but.
I love colors. I love colors, first of all. So, I mean, we can talk about colors forever, but I think the green can mean a lot of things. For me and my medical intuitive work, my sort of medical intuitive spirit guide partner is Archangel Raphael. And I view that from a completely inclusive, non-religious, non-denominational, non-gendered perspective, just a being I've known for 30 years. And he usually brings a lot of green. So sometimes that would mean medical intuitive work. But for me, it's also synonymous with healing plants, because I'm a plant person, and the heart, which we know from the chakra system. In Aura Alchemy, my latest book, we have this, I'm going to see if I can find it, giant, it's called Amy's Medical Intuitive Color Meanings. So this is a chart of all kinds of colors. Of course, it's not a color book, although that would be cool, but it's black and white, but I describe the colors. It's a chart of all kinds of colors. You can see it's like a 6-page chart. Tessa can see if you're watching the video, you can see if you're, you know, just listening to the podcast, you can check it out later, but it has all the meanings that I ascribe to really specific types of colors through my work as a medical intuitive. So let's see. We're not wearing chartreuse. I'm going to see what I said in here. Forest green and emerald green are both in here. So emerald green, which Tessa's wearing. Color description, bright, jewel-toned, rich green. Feeling, nurturance and caring. Meaning, healing power. Bodily or aura area, hands, arms, head, upper torso, and back, typically. Forest green, which I'm wearing, darker green with a muted tone. Feeling is equanimity. Meaning is composure. And bodily area or aura area is upper body, upper aura. And I did need some composure this morning because I was feeling a little bit scattered with like emails from my publisher and lots of different things happening. So that worked well. I didn't really think of that when I felt like I needed to wear it, but here we are.
Well, and I just love how subconscious or maybe just intuitive it is to reach for something that you need, even when you don't consciously make the connection that you need the thing.
Yes.
But that's what's so cool about retrospect is that we can look back and be like, oh, I can trust myself.
Yes.
Which is another thing that I wanted to touch on today with you, Amy, in terms of the reason I love this kind of work and this conversation so much. To me, there's many reasons, but the one that's sticking out to me today is that it's such a helpful reminder that you said it in the audiobook that we are our own guru.
Yes.
And we have this power within us to heal ourselves. And sometimes it can feel like, you know, searching around in the dark, looking for the light switch, and it takes a while to find that light switch to turn on. And sometimes it can feel like, you know, when that moment of realization, when the blindfold comes off. But I always find it such a helpful reminder that not only do I have that within me, but there is something greater than myself that I can lean on, such as for me, it's always nature to reset. Yeah, right. And I mean, the green speaks to it too, that I can really reset my nervous system and reconnect and ground. So all of that to say is I want to dive more into Aura Alchemy, and I would love, so this chapter, is this, I think technically just a section in the book. I'm on page 44.
We started looking at the book. That just makes me feel so happy.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. You went through the, you know, I mean, I was thinking, gosh, I wonder if this was super fun to write for Amy, because it seems like it would have been. But it's still a labor of love, right? You still have to do the work. So thank you for writing it. So the section I'm looking at is the time particles, gravitons, and the many worlds theory. Yay! I'd love it if we could start there, because it's such an interesting conversation.
That's like the funnest of all the chapters. Yes. I mean, there's a lot of fun chapters, but yeah, I've always been really into particle physics and chemistry and all of that. I'm a science person, but I've also taught beginner, intermediate, advanced, and expert level shamanism for over 20 years as well. So you can imagine a chapter entitled Time Particles, Gravitons, and the Many Worlds Theory. I mean, you can imagine the intersection of science and shamanic journey work there. Because, you know, for over 20 years, it's been my utter complete joy to help people learn how to journey into alternate reality to bring back healing and information. What that really means is to talk to their spirit guides. Where are we going in alternate reality? We're going perhaps into a composite of another dimension in our own subconscious. We don't totally know, and it's probably different for everybody. So when something like Everett's Many World Theory or any of the other many, you know, theories that bring all these infinite dimensions into quantum mechanics, into the consciousness of science, start to be postulated, start to have people trying to prove that, it's just like a hallelujah chorus for me, because it's what we do in shamanic journey work. And perhaps eventually we can put, you know, equations to this and be able to quantify some of this more. The thing that I think is so exciting about quantum physics in general is the never-ending tumble down the rabbit hole of tinier and tinier particles that will probably never end. So when we talk about time particles and gravitons, I mean, that's just probably tip of the iceberg. Really, if we could, they haven't, so to kind of clue our listeners in too, in Aura Alchemy before that, we're talking about what the world is actually made of from a particle perspective. And a big part of that we end up talking about is photons, because of the aura stuff that we were talking about earlier. But we also talk about what is time made of. For many years as a medical intuitive, what I've seen is time, space, and thought are three different intersecting dimensions. And they bend and wave and oscillate, and they do a lot of different things. That's how I personally experience it. So this dimension of time, which only probably exists in duality or certain parts of duality, and when we do journey shamanically, we touch into outside of time. We can feel it. We can sense it. So this dimension of time, what could it be made of? And we have scientists who are trying to come up with theories and find equations that work out to quantify time particles. That's very exciting to me. Mm-hmm. Then gravity is one of four forces in the universe. So we have four main forces that we know about in the universe that exert pull: the strong force, the weak force, electromagnetic force, which is the photons, and then we have the force of gravity, which is the weaker of these four forces. What is gravity made of? And so right now, scientists call these potential particles that have yet to be proven gravitons. So we literally are here on Earth due to this force that we call gravity. That's why we're not floating off the Earth right now. But we do not know how it works completely or what it's made of, which is pretty awesome. And one of the other things you probably liked, judging if you liked this chapter in the book, is also the talk of telepathy particles. Because then that's another thing. We've all experienced that. And that is real. And I mean, even you and I both wearing green, there was some kind of something waving and particling around town here. What was it made of?
Oh, we don't know. I love this so much. I'm so into quantum physics. Is such an interesting topic. So I'm so glad you touch on it. I'm so glad you touch on it in the book, because it gives it a level for me, speaking of gravity, of grounding it in reality, something tangible. Yes. That I can be like, oh, that on a physical level is something that I resonate with and I can see and touch. And,
yes.
You know, I mean, I guess I wonder, like, when people come to you in your work, the question I had was, mm-hmm. how do you deal with the skeptic mind? And I'm one of those. I need that sense of like, well, how can we prove all of this that we can't see,
right.
touch, feel? I need it to be, my cynical mind shows up and it's like, wait a minute, Tessa, how do you know this is really true?
Right.
You know?
Right.
So I guess I wonder, do you have anything to say about whether or not you believe people that come to you for healing really need to mm-hmm. believe in the medicine to be able to be healed?
I think it helps. You know, I like to write fiction. I haven't published it yet, but there's a term in fiction, the willing suspension of disbelief. You know, when you dive into a fiction story and you know it's not, you know it's fiction, but you allow yourself to immerse in it. If people come in with some willingness, it certainly makes it easier. I mean, if somebody comes in simply to disprove it, then, you know, that's going to be what it's going to be. Now, over 23 plus years, I've had many, many, many sessions where people do come in skeptical, and the information that comes forward is something that I couldn't have known. And sometimes for those people, it'll be a deceased loved one. So it'll be like, you know, real specific stuff. And that's, you know, if their higher self, their guides, whatever you want to call it, if their higher self has basically on a soul level said yes to having an experience that allows them to expand their mind and consider thinking differently. And it sometimes has to be something extreme, like, oh my gosh, she could have never known that my deceased grandpa used to say these words to me, because mm-hmm. they're not, you know, in the vernacular or whatever. So sometimes things like that happen. That's nice, because then those people, I think they even get more benefit. But that, I always really stress, that has nothing to do with me. All I am is the messenger for the highest good. That's it. Now, have I put parameters in place over the years that I want to have positive experiences with people? Yeah, because who doesn't? But and people to get the most benefit, because I can do the most good that way. Mm-hmm. But beyond that, it's out of my hands. So if that soul comes in, and even if they're not conscious of it, they've chosen to heal, to open, whatever, then I just can be a portal for that. That's mm-hmm. all I really do.
Oh, yeah. I love that. Cool. Okay. That's
so
very
helpful.
So hopefully
that's where they're coming from. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think, you know, we show up for the thing, even with a healthy level of skepticism, when we,
yes.
on a deeper level, know we need it.
Yeah.
I think that's true.
Yeah. And to take the time to make the appointment, to pay the money,
right.
to show up, you know, all, I don't like typically work on the weekend. So people are going to make time in their schedule, and they've probably gotten referred. I mean, now it's the internet, but I've been doing this for so long. For many years, it was all referrals before the internet. So they've probably gotten referred. So they've heard their friend had a transformative experience, et cetera. So they already come in primed, mostly.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Interesting. Well, so mm-hmm. some specific questions about aura. And I love how the book guides us through being able to see and connect with our aura. And I was also fascinated with the topic around perceiving other people's aura and being able to see if a partner is a good match. That was really fun. Is there anything that you want to share with listeners about that subject?
Sure. I definitely talk in the book about consent. So as far as like looking at other people's auras and things like that, we don't really want to like be nosy necessarily. And for those of us who are empaths, we also like to, I mean, I have to kind of have those senses turned down when I'm out in the world and sealed up, because otherwise it's like, I don't know, being in a crowd of loud feelings all the time. So I'm sure many people relate to that who are listening too. But yeah, it can be really illuminating when we're able to tune into someone's aura. So we talk, like, say you're going to have a job interview or something like that. We talk about the ethical ways that maybe you could, like, lightly and non-nosily view an aura to have that work better for you. Or, you know, for example, with a dating partner too, a lot of it for many people just kind of corroborates your gut feeling. You already know your electromagnetic field, your aura is already attuned to sense. And you're, you know, that's why we call it a gut feeling. It's a deep foundational level knowing. So a lot of times it's confirming that. Now, you know, with the partner, if they're already a romantic partner too, we talk about what happens when auras touch or overlap. And that's a case where you kind of have implicit consent and it's already happening. You know, even if you, in, by the way, in the land of, you know, particles and all, telepathy particles and all of that, we're looking at each other across the country, but are our auras touching? Kind of. Like, we're sitting talking like friends, you know? And so with a partner, especially with like a romantic partner, you're on a date, et cetera, you're sitting, you're on a first date, you're sitting at a table across from each other. Unless you're 6 feet apart, there is some overlap of these auras. So you're going to be able to feel, see, sense, intuit, hear, smell, taste, whatever way you perceive things, some information. And not in a nosy way, but in a way to understand, okay, is this person kind, caring, sensitive, intelligent, safe, whatever you want, you know? Or what are they like? You can feel these things. So in the context of something like that, you don't necessarily want to sit there and like close your eyes and be like meditating, tuning in, we're trying to have a conversation. But if you practice these skills that we go through in the book on your own, then when you are in a situation like that, you will potentially get flashes like color or texture or the spatiality of the aura or the vibrational signature of the person. You know, I went on a first date a while back and there was like light blue and some nice kind of sparkliness and, you know, a feeling of integrity in the person. And then I'm like, okay, I would make another date with this person. So that's a way it could play out.
Yeah. And then how about learning to see our own aura, learning to tap into that? And for the purpose of, and you talk about this in all of your work, is self-love and nurturing your spiritual well-being. How do we, what's some practical ways that we can start to do that for ourselves?
Yeah. For those reasons, and also for health, physical health, emotional health, spiritual, mental, etheric health, all of these. There's a lot of different things we do in the book. We kind of journey into the aura. We learn to own the space of the aura. The thing with ourselves is we're like in here, you know? So we sort of also are seeing the world through it. And our human projector is going through the lens of our aura to create our reality. So we're in it, but it does let us see it. It lets us journey into it. And one of the things that I think is really valuable that we can all kind of do together is to think about, feel about, and tune into owning your space, which is your body and your aura. that does extend out to your life, your affairs, your car, your house, your property, whatever. You know, when we own our space, then we're filling our aura with our own essence. And so there's less empty space or unclaimed space where people who are empathic, for example, might feel impacted from the outside. In that owning of the space, it still is absolutely going to allow in all the high vibrational energy and all the good things. So to do that, we can all just really, you know, you can close your eyes. If you're driving, please don't close your eyes. Just, you know, follow along while paying really good attention. Because I know we all like to listen to podcasts when we're driving nowadays. So yeah, you can close your eyes and tune in for a moment to first feel the edges of your body. And I do take you through this a little bit more in depth in the book, but feel the edges of your body, like all the area that your skin covers. See how much of it you can feel at once, whether you need to like do first your head and then your torso and arms and then your hips and legs and feet, and then can you feel all of it? And then widen that out to 3 feet around you in all directions. And that's your aura or electromagnetic field. And feel that bubble. Just feel its edges. Notice it. You don't need to do anything yet. You're just going to feel that you're inhabiting it. And then you can say internally or aloud, if possible, I own my space. And say that to yourself a few times. I own my space. And as you do, feel those edges. Feel your essence infusing your body and your whole auric egg. I own my space. I own my space. Feel what that feels like. And now you can choose to infuse that space with high vibrational energy. And we'll just use joy, because joy is the highest vibration in the known universe. So begin repeating the word joy like a mantra in your mind or aloud. Joy, joy, joy. And keep saying it. Even as I'm continuing to speak, you're repeating joy. You can see high vibrational white light sparkling, flowing out from the center of your being through the aura and perhaps cascading down through it or up through it. And you're just repeating joy, joy, joy. And as you're owning your space, consciously filling your space with joy, you can feel you're now inhabiting that. And now you can state, I own my space. I own my life. I own my joy. And now from that space, you can choose to put out whatever you decide. So you could say something like, I live in my zone of genius. And I feel great all the time. And I really appreciate how wonderful I feel. And feel that echo through your aura and your life. And now you can open your eyes and feel yourself coming back. How did that feel? Could you feel it?
Yeah, I could actually. Sometimes, you know, sometimes it's easier to drop in than others. And I found this time to be particularly just immediate. Yeah. And like I was saying before, when I see color, with that particular meditation, I immediately started to see you mentioned seeing kind of like a white, I think it was a white light you said.
Yep.
And for me, it has this, yellowy orangey tone to it.
Pretty.
That started to turn to like a deep green. So that was interesting.
Well, we're greening.
Yeah, we're totally greening.
We're greening today, so it makes sense.
But I love that. Oh, that's so, it's so accessible. It's simple.
It's simple. And, yeah.
It's just.
And you can say that, you know, out in the world. I own my space. I own my light. I own my body. I own my aura. I own my life. Whatever you want to say, it just helps you maintain your structural integrity energetically.
Mm-hmm. Oh. Well, so you also talk about chakras, and I wanted to, and we mentioned this just a little bit, but can we just briefly discuss how I kind of visualize, I don't know if this makes sense, because chakras to me are discs that are spinning horizontally, the seven main chakras, and I know there's more than that, but in this case, we're talking about the seven main chakras located up and down the central channel of the spine, and then aura is this thing that like sounds like 3 feet around us is our earth field.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So how do they play with each other? How do we work with them together?
So all of this energy is interwoven through us. My perspective, you know, I've written a lot of books on chakras, and my perspective as a medical intuitive has evolved, you know, in the Upanishads, which were part of early Vedism. That was the first mention of chakras, and there's anywhere from 1 to 144 chakras mentioned in those texts. The seven chakra system was popularized by the Theosophical Society in the 18 and 1900s, you know, the rainbow color attributes, etc. I think those are very resonant, and that's why they have expanded and people have really gravitated toward them. My experience of chakras as a medical intuitive is that they are mutable, changeable, and people have definitely some commonalities, but not necessarily everything is the same. Not everything is the same from a color perspective. And I'm very heavily medical intuitive perspective wise into Taoism and the meridian system. Mm-hmm. So I do see these things as all interwoven. So there's these, you know, organ meridians and all these meridians, rivers of light moving through the body, and then chakras being, you know, revolving energy centers, whether we want to picture them like a galaxy or a galaxy, but it's more spherical and they're moving and everything is resonating and intermingling inside the body. And then all of that is also radiating out through the aura. So it's all interwoven. That's personally how I experience it. And, you know, because I like to look at things on the particle level, and I need to sometimes in my medical intuitive work, sometimes, you know, when something somebody comes in with has to do with the way that a cell membrane is or isn't ionized and it's causing something in the body. So sometimes I have to look at that really small level and the way that the light, electricity, photons are moving through the cell. That same light, that same electricity, those photons are what is probably powering those chakras, those meridians, and then as we know, as electromagnetic force and field creating the aura. So to kind of like bring that all together, to me, it's just teeming and seething with life in balls, bundles, rivers, resonances through the body, through the aura, with chakras, meridians, and probably a bunch of other cool stuff.
Yeah. I'm so curious about what the, when you're seeing someone as a medical intuitive, what a prescription might look like. And I 1000% understand that that's going to be a very bio-individual answer, and it's going to be dependent on what someone's experiencing. And I could give you a personal anecdote, or you could just share a story that...
You can give personal if you want, or I have stories, whichever you'd like. Go, if you want to do that, go for it.
Okay. Well, this is a simple one. I often get cold sores, and I have one right now.
Yes.
So I'm wondering, like, what is the, because this is a, it's, you know, I've done a little bit of research, and what I know is it can be like an overabundance of vitamin C or vitamin D or dietary things. Stress certainly plays into it. And so, yeah, I'm curious about that.
That's a great question. And it's funny because I was texting with a close friend about it this morning because they that question. So
I love that.
It's absolutely individual, but do you want me to, I don't always do this, but if I do get any hits, do you want me to share the individual part?
For it. Yeah.
So I'll kind of talk about it generally, but then we'll see. So with cold sores or anything like that, it's basically what we would call damp heat in the body, and it's viral. So the thing about viral pathogens is that they can be internal and external, including at the same time. So there's could be a chance that you have another viral pathogen to which you are exposed that perhaps jazzed your immune system up a little bit. And then what that and didn't cause any symptoms because we're exposed to all kinds of stuff all the time. What that sometimes does is goes down to what we call the constitutional level, which if you can imagine your constitutional level, chi, like a deep underground river of the most vital life force, mm-hmm. you know, you're just absolute, just internal, most high vibe essence. It also on that constitutional level contains a lot of things that are congenital that you came in with. Ancestral, karmic. It's also where sometimes we put things into what we call latency. So viruses, bacteria, fungi, microbes that our body's not able to completely clear from the system, but we stop having symptomology from, also get put down into the constitutional level. Sometimes an example, and disclaimer is Amy's not a doctor, consult your health practitioner. Sometimes one of the ways that happens is antibiotics, which are very thermally cold in traditional Chinese medicine, TCM. So if somebody has a, you know, all of us as kids were probably given antibiotics. We have a viral pathogen showing up in the respiratory system. We took an antibiotic. It would be like taking that fire, that pathogen, which is nature's, you know, as long as we don't have bad symptoms and we live through it, nature's opportunity to create a fire to burn other constitutional latency off. And we threw a damp, cool blanket on it. And so then this wool blanket pushes it down back into constitutional level latency, but it's then kind of like little embers sitting there. And then the next time the next virus comes, that ignites it. And then if we push it down into latency, it happens again. Whether we do that through antibiotics or the body may do it on its own. So we get viral latency in the constitutional channel. Viruses are innately provoking. And so at times, they will provoke out what we call ancestral latency. So imagine latency would be like a boulder at the bottom of this deep underground river of beautiful vital life force. That's your constitutional level of your chi. It's not really causing any problems. Down at the bottom, nobody can see it. It might be sort of impeding the flow, but the energy is going around it. It's no big deal. If it starts to come out of latency or dormancy and starts poking at the top, then we see it. Then we see it's making a break in the flow of the water. And then if it comes up and out, it goes into one of, you know, any of the organ meridians or beyond, with the closest being kidney bladder channel, but, you know, continuing to move up through the organ meridians wherever it's meant to express. When a viral pathogen pushes ancestral latency up and out, sometimes the body says, whoa, this is too much. And latency could be, you know, trauma that happened to an ancestor that came down in the genome, or feelings, energy, emotions, thoughts that we suppressed and put into latency, trauma, what it could be, many different things. So if the body says, whoa, this is too much, we need to mitigate this latency. We're going to do this by putting it in dampness or damp accumulation, and that's going to slow it down. So damp heat shows up in the form of a cold sore. Now, that is the orifice of the mouth. Sometimes that's the earth element channel, which can be spleen, stomach, pancreas. That might be where it's coming up and out. So what it means is what provokes it for you could be all kinds of things. Could be a heat thing. It could be, you know, heat, sun, warmth. It could be something you experience. It could be something you ate. It could be all these things. Something provokes that viral pathogen to try to come up and out. And in its process, I think in your case especially, is dragging some ancestral latency up. Mm. So you want to move the damp out of the body. There's a lot of ways we do that. When it's things that are more respiratory based and aren't as much a heat damp, they're just a damp, which would be mucus, you know, congestion, things like that. Certain GI things that are cold damp as opposed to hot damp, you would move the damp through sweating, singing, dancing, exercise, anything sweaty, sauna. Because it's a damp heat, in your case, you have some choices. You could use a thermally cooling remedy like colloidal silver or aloe vera to calm the fire, and it might just put it into latency a little bit, but then you don't have a cold sore, which could be good, especially if it's uncomfortable. Or you can allow it to come out and express, and that would be doing some conscious work around releasing whatever the latency is. And even if you don't know, and we don't really need to know, like, what happened to our ancestors that put this thing in the genome or whatever, it's like, we don't always need to know. In my work, do we sometimes find out? Yeah, we do. But it could just also be intentioning, like, I'm really grateful and appreciative that my body is so wise and it's letting me release this latency with ease. and it's going to come out, you know, with minimal to no symptoms. I'm going to feel great. And I'm facilitating that. And I'm thanking my ancestor, high vibrational ancestors, for coming and helping me with this and taking this ancestral latency to the other side and processing it for me. Mm-hmm. So that might be a way to do that. I have a meditation and a subliminal on my website in the shop called Connect with Your High Vibe Ancestors. So you can use it. It's kind of hypnosis-ish. It puts you in a hypnotic state and then you experience the movement of subatomic particles and first person affirmative statements to have your high vibe ancestors help you. Or you could play the subliminal, or you can just create some affirmations around it, let it move through, and then perhaps the virus will have used up its usefulness and be done at some point.
Mm-hmm. Oh, so, like done, forever done. Maybe. Could be. Oh, that's cool.
That's another thing to open up to thinking differently about, that virus is doing such a tremendous job helping you clear things. And we're so grateful to it. And we're excited for it to go on to its next highest level of evolution and do something else.
I love that so much. That's such a beautiful reframe, Amy. Thank you. I want to be mindful of your time and just thank you so much again. I'm holding up the book. Aura Alchemy, Learn to Sense Energy Fields, Interpret the Color Spectrum, and Manifest Success. For like we said at the beginning, Amy's got tons of work and experience under her belt. This is book number 18. And I did want to just spend a little bit of time, if you have the bandwidth, to also talk about Blissful Baths deck, because that just came out too, which is so cool.
Will you
tell us a little bit about it and share anything you want from it?
Blissful Baths is 40 cards with bath recipes, intentions, mantras, spiritual activities, everything. So do we want to maybe like pick a card, kind of like we do a reading for all of us?
Can we?
It's so fun. And you can see, if you're seeing the video, Tessa can see, it's like recipe cards. So it comes with a book that gives you this like really fun info, including the history of ritual bathing, which is very interesting. If you ever want to talk to me about how baths developed, I know now.
Oh my gosh, how cool.
And let's pick one from the wellness section. Does that sound good? Well, those sections are energy, relaxation, and wellness.
Let's do wellness.
Extra sensory artistry is our reading card. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to read it to you. Part of it, not all of it because it's long. Extra sensory artistry bath. Your intuitive senses are always there within you. They're waiting to be cultivated and tapped. In time, as you learn how they work, you can become an adept and bring a sense of artistry to your being. This bath will help you align with that destiny. So the ingredients, which we talk about, you know, what their properties are, but I'll just tell us for the moment. They are 3 cups of dried chamomile flowers, 1 cup of fresh orange or peach organic rose petals, and 5 drops of vetiver essential oil. So we have like a whole activity we do to tap you into your intuition from an artistic standpoint. And then your intention for the bath is, I am infinite and limitless.
Oh, that's so cool.
So this bath deck is so fun because you can use it for divination, like just to tap it. You can still do this without being in a bath. You can hold the card to you. Or you can take the bath, and let's say you're like, I don't have any orange or peach rose petals on hand. That's okay. You can use what you have and do something similar, use the same ritual, the same intention, and get a very similar effect.
All the benefits. I mean, that's similar to, you know, I love that, and I'm glad you said that, because it's important to remember that it doesn't have to be perfect to the letter.
Yes.
That we can still have the intention and still reap the benefits just because we showed up and we tried.
So and better you. To start.
Yes.
You know, to do it tonight instead of being like, oh, well, I need to go to the store and get these ingredients, but I don't have time till Thursday. Just do it tonight.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
The thing about a bath is it's also going to use heat to move dampness. Wink, wink.
Yeah.
it's another way to induce a sweat if you so desire. And it's time for you. So even if you don't put anything in it, it's better than not taking it.
Yes, I 1,000% agree. Absolutely. So, Amy, just real quick before I let you go, tell us where you love to connect people. Where can we find you?
Yes. My website is my name, amyleemercree.com. And Instagram is where I'm really active, Amy Lee McCree. I'm also on TikTok at I Am Amy Lee McCree. There is an Amy Lee McCree TikTok. I own it. I don't know how long into it. So now where I am, Amy Lee McCree. So I have two. Someday maybe the other one will wake up if I can figure out how to get in there.
Oh, technology. Don't we love it?
So TikTok is I Am Amy Lee McCree. Everything else is just my name.
Okay, great. Well, we'll make sure all of those links get into our show notes so you can just click the little info button below.
Perfect.
And see the description and follow along with Amy's journey and be healed and heal yourself and learn all these fun, amazing things. Thank you so much, Amy. Is there any last thing you want to say to the audience before we say goodbye?
I just want to say thank you for listening and thank you to Tessa for being such an amazing interviewer.
Aw, thank you.
Yeah.
Please remember to subscribe, rate, and review on your platform of choice. And if you're listening to this and you found it helpful and you're thinking, gosh, my friend or my partner or my loved one could really benefit from this conversation, please remember to share it out.
Hey friends, thank you so much for listening to the Radically Love podcast. Don't forget to subscribe, rate, and review wherever you get your podcasts. It really helps. Also, don't forget to check out the Mindful Love Hub on Substack. This episode was produced by Tessa Tovar, music by DJ Taz Rashid.